Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Take Courage, Encouraging Words for Discouraging Times. This new resource reminds discouraged Christians of the one thing right in the world, the person who alone has overcome the world. Find out more about Take Courage at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Take Courage by Pastor Matt Harrison, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
You're not here.
We're not there. The car exploded. Come get the girls. I have to stay here with Woodrow.
I'm not the chauffeur. I'm the grandfather. Where are you?
Asteroid City, Farm Route 6, mile 75.
Last train. Junior stargazers and space cadets. Each year we celebrate Asteroid Day, commemorating September 23rd, 3007 BC, when the Arid Plains meteorite made Earth impact.
That's a little bit of the trailer from the movie Asteroid City. You've probably been seeing its trailer everywhere, hearing about it on social media. It's heavily promoted, and it is studded with stars. So is it a good movie? What's its worldview? And since Wes Anderson has quite a track record for success, is it ready-made for an Oscar? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Friday afternoon, 30th of June. We'll be reviewing the movie Asteroid City with Pastor Ted Geese. Then we'll spend some time with Dr. Gregory Lockwood, author of the Concordia Commentary on 1 Corinthians, discussing headship and head coverings in 1 Corinthians 11. We'll round everything off today talking with Professor Nancy Piercy, author of the new book, The Toxic War on Masculinity, How Christianity Reconciles the Sexes. We'll discuss Christianity's response to toxic masculinity. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
This is the first movie that I've contemplated watching in a long time, given my busy schedule between work and family, and of course it's baseball season, and I'm actually thinking about taking a little time out this weekend to watch Asteroid City. It seems intriguing, and to call it star-studded is actually an understatement. Does that mean it's a good movie?
Well, that depends on how you're judging it, I guess. So, okay, so you said star-studded. So it's got Bryan Cranston in it, Edward Norton, Jason Schwartzman. It's got Scarlett Johansson. It's got Maya Hawke.
One minor celebrity, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, yes. Yeah, it's got Liev Schreiber. It's got all of these guys, like all of these actors and actors in it. Matt Dillon. It's a bunch of people. And even some, you know, Jeff Goldblum even shows up in it. So these are all of the usual characters. I think Bill Murray is not in it. He's been in all of the Wes Anderson films except his very first one and this current one. And I think that Steven Carell ended up taking his spot in the movie because of something to do with COVID back when it was being shot. So yeah, there's going to be a pile of actors in it. Lots of people that you like. Now, I'm going to say, okay, so knowing that you might want to go see this movie, this is very unusual for us when we're having this conversation, but knowing that you want to go see this film, I'm just going to tell you up front that right from the get-go, it's set up and it's like basically like a 60s TV program. Think like Twilight Zone / Playhouse 90 kind of style, kind of a thing, with a host that just introduces that you're watching this program about the making of a play in which you're going to see the play in three acts. So you're going to see behind the scenes stuff. You're going to see dramatized versions of things going on around the story itself. So this is kind of, for anybody who's been involved in theater at all, small town theater, any kind of theater, this is going to be interesting because it's going to be actors playing actors playing actors. This is all kind of what's going on in it. If you are tired of superhero movies and lots of like super duper dumb inane stuff, this is going to be a palate cleanser, basically. This is a whole other kind of thing. If you don't already know a little bit about Wes Anderson and the style of movie that he makes, his movies are now like this is probably one of the most Wes Anderson movies you're going to see. So he's kind of Wes Anderson doing Wes Anderson in this film in a lot of ways. So it's not going to be for everybody, clearly. But it's an interesting movie where it kind of holds its cards really close to the chest as you go through it, and then slowly starts to reveal the cards as to what's going on by the end.
One of the most striking things, even from seeing the trailer, is it is a very stylized look to it. I'm almost wondering whether they're doing something in terms of the cinematography, processing it in such a way to make it appear the way it does. Very pastel, very bright.
Yeah, so I kind of think of it like this. So there's parts of it that are in black and white, vis-a-vis that kind of 60s TV program kind of 50s, 60s kind of TV program kind of thing. But then what you're talking about, all of these bright, washed out, almost pastel colors, this is almost like what he's doing is hitting a certain kind of nostalgia button, but it's a very peculiar one. If you can think of like photographs that your family took in the 60s, maybe the early 70s, late 50s, and you look at them now, they've started to kind of fade and wash out, and they kind of start to more approximate the color palette that you're seeing in this movie. So it's almost like everything that you're watching is something that has kind of degraded in that particular way. It's sharp, you can see everything, it's not like hard to watch, but it has that kind of color palette that exists as a result of the chemical process fading over time from what they used for the chemical process of photography or film back around the time that this film is set in.
Now, just tell us about Wes Anderson. Give us a little context. If you've only heard the name, but you aren't connected with the fact that he's made a large number of films and a large number of very successful films that do attract actors, they want to be in his films.
Yeah, he's an auteur director. This is a concept that other auteur directors would be people like Alfred Hitchcock or Steven Spielberg or even George Lucas to a certain point. So that means that he writes, he directs, he's the producer, sometimes with other people helping him with some of these things, but his hand is in all of it. Everything on the screen in terms of the dialogue, everything is the way he wants it. And people may have been familiar, you know, seeing some of his films at different points along the way without kind of putting it together who he is. So back in 1996, he did a kind of charming little movie called Bottle Rocket. And then 1998, he did a film called Rushmore. Rushmore was kind of his big, kind of bigger success. From there, he sprang into The Royal Tenenbaums, which that one was really well liked by audiences. It included Bill Murray in it. Again, he was also in Rushmore. And then The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou featured Bill Murray as kind of the key person with Owen Wilson in 2004. And this one is about kind of a Jacques Cousteau style oceanographer and kind of a quirky story that revolves around him. All of the films are relatively or over the top quirky. The Darjeeling Limited, about a group of brothers going to India to bury their father and being on a train ride, is maybe more serious but still quirky. And then also he makes these films that are stop action animation films. So he did The Fantastic Mr. Fox, and he also did a movie called Isle of Dogs. Then some of his films like The Grand Budapest Hotel and The French Dispatch, and then now this film, kind of start to utilize a little bit of that stop action animation kind of stuff in the film itself, mixed in with everything else. So he's kind of like building this big toolkit of style related things. And a lot of people think of his films as style forward or style first over content, but he does have a lot to say, but it's kind of obfuscated or obscured a little bit by the artifice that's around the film itself. So there's layers on layers and layers of visual style and cinematic style that you kind of need to like work your way through to get at what the film is actually saying. So he did a pile of these movies. We talked about The French Dispatch. We talked about The Grand Budapest Hotel along the way. Moonrise Kingdom is another kind of fun one from 2012. That's just before we started doing our reviews together. But he's got an interesting film history, And people do want to work with him because, and he gets them to work with him at scale, apparently. So they get paid what just a entry level actor doing a part, depending on how big the part is going to get paid, but they all want to be there for the ride. And he has this kind of history of having different actors show up over and over again in his films. Like I said, Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson, Bill Murray, Jason Schwartzman, you got your Jeff Goldblum's, Adrian Brody, Tilda Swinton, all of these Edward Norton, they all show up multiple times in over multiple films. And this one has got a bunch of these guys in it.
What's the plot?
In a nutshell, kind of revolves around one particular family more so than the other characters in it. I'll tell you the plot of the play. So the plot of the play inside the film is this teenage boy goes to this place called Asteroid City out in the desert for a, I guess it would be like a sort of a military industrial complex sponsored science fair. And he's in the running to win an award. He goes there with his father and his three sisters. And as they arrive in town, their car breaks down and they're kind of stuck there, sort of. And then other people show up for this little science fair. And while the science fair is kind of underway, an alien arrives. And as a result, the town gets quarantined and they're stuck there. And that's sort of the plot, what happens as a result of all of that, all kind of unspooling from there. That when they arrive in the town, Jason Schwartzman plays the father, Augie Steinbeck. He hasn't told the kids yet that their mother died 3 weeks earlier. So there's a kind of a grief and loss story that's going on in the midst of all of this as well. And all of these characters interact with each other in this little town. But of course, like I said, these are actors playing these parts in this three-act play. So the other story is the writer having written the story, and Edward Norton is the writer who writes the story. Adrian Brody is the director of the play, and then there's the play itself.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Geese about the movie Asteroid City on the other side of the break. What is the film's worldview? Stay tuned. Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. Like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Ad Crucem's Christmas in July sale is being held from July 1st until the 8th. Almost all our products are less 25%. This only happens once a year, so hurry on over to adcrucem.com and stock up on jewelry, church banners, certificates, plaques, chancel culture products, Christmons, Christmas ornaments, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Memoria Press award-winning Latin programs have successfully taught hundreds of thousands of students across the world. Their easy-to-use, step-by-step Latin curriculum provides students with an academic vocabulary, a mastery of English grammar, and strong critical thinking skills. If you're interested in learning more, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next purchase by using the coupon code LPR23. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the Master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, Freedom, Vocation. Concordia University, Chicago. CUChicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Asteroid City with Pastor Ted Geese. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. So, Ted, what would you say is the film's worldview? You say it's a very meta thing, a play within a play, within a TV show, within a movie.
Yeah. And then, of course, you sitting in the audience know that these are actors you know who are playing these parts for this film, right? So it is like it starts to get quite meta. I think when you kind of boil it all down and really think about what you're looking and what's being presented on this screen, it kind of enters into the worldview of agnostic nihilism. And I say agnostic nihilism because it might not be that nothing means anything, but nobody's sure if it does actually mean something or not. So the actors don't really understand their characters. And they don't 100% understand the motivations of the characters. They also don't really know what the plot is exactly, or the narrative is exactly, or what the meaning of the film is actually, to the point that some of the characters ask this about the film. But if they ask the director doesn't know because the director didn't write it. And then they ask, if pressed, the writer might say, I don't know, he just started doing it while I was typing. So it gives the impression that the writer doesn't know what the meaning is, the director doesn't know what the meaning is, the actors don't know what the meaning is, which then is begging the question of the audience, what do you think the meaning of this is? And Wes Anderson kind of gets to sidestep himself out of the whole equation in a way, but it's all really kind of about him, I guess, right? Because he's the auteur director who puts it all together. So I think maybe that he doesn't know what the meaning of all of this is, except for this one kind of caveat that comes up along the way, is that even if you don't know what the meaning of everything is, you still have a part to play. And as a result, you need to play that part to the fullest, even if you don't know what it all means. So this is where it's kind of like, it's a positive agnostic nihilism of a kind, I guess. So it's interesting. It's kind of, for somebody who, like for most film goers that enjoy having everything just kind of laid out very easily for them, that's not what you're getting here. I mean, you have to kind of mull it over as you go.
I don't want you to give it away because I definitely want to watch it now that I heard you describe it a little bit. Do you think it lived up to the hype? Because they're already saying this is going to take Wes Anderson maybe to a best director territory again.
Okay, so sidebar, interesting detail. Kate, remember a couple of years ago we had a conversation about like the changes with the Academy Awards, where like eligibility and things like that, and you had to have X number of certain things in the film before it was eligible. And if it wasn't in the movie itself, then it had to be these people working on it had to fit a certain criteria, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this film is checking off all of those little boxes. So it will be actually eligible for a potential Oscar nomination. We'll put it that way. And he has had some in the past, so that's possible. There is kind of, I felt like, I mean, in the context of this kind of a story. It is not completely out of place, but there felt like a kind of a little tacked on awkward homosexual moment that kind of checks a box in a way. I don't know that it's really, it's not integral to anything per se in the film. I don't think. I would almost want to say that, you know, like if this film does really well at the box office, then it would be more likely to get a nomination. But I don't think any of that actually matters for the Oscars. So yes, I think you're probably right. It's going to garner Oscar nominations for sure. If not, maybe for the writing, certainly for the art direction and things like that.
How does it deal with death?
Well, about as well as North America deals with death right now, I think, almost in some ways. So like the three little girls in this central family that I mentioned, they have names based after constellations. So it's Andromeda, Pandora, and Cassiopeia. And it's repeatedly mentioned that they're Episcopalians. And the inference there is that the mother who died was an Episcopalian, but the father isn't. So they've got this kind of mixed family of atheist, maybe agnostic, you know, guy who's a war photographer. And these little girls, half the time they're referred to as witches. They call themselves witches, but they're also maybe half alien, like kids playing around with, I'm a monster truck or whatever kind of a thing. But then there's these little moments where they kind of, they're a little creepy in some sort of ways, like when it comes to some of this stuff. But everything to do with this mother who's died and her ashes, it's all kind of in the realm of, well, we need to do something, but we don't know what exactly. And we're Episcopalian, but we're not connected to any of that. And it kind of starts to get a little maybe superstitious-ish in places about what to do. There's little prayers along the way kind of connected with all of this. Even just some general comments like I was saying, the father isn't Christian per se and at all, like at least, you know, not in any kind of discernible way. And he says, well, let's say that your mother's in heaven. You know, like this is the kind of comment that gets made. So I don't know. It's clear that they're going through grief. And there's moments where characters have to say to each other, well, I'm going through it too. Because some people get so wrapped up in their own head when it comes to this, they kind of forget about other people. And it is kind of touching on some of that along the way. You know, for what all of this is, and the reality of people not dealing well with death is a reality that's expressed in this film.
How is the acting? It's got some world-class actors. How is it?
It's of a certain variety. It's definitely more on the deadpan, naturalistic kind of end of things. It's this kind of bizarre quality where it's like the story itself, you could say, is kind of melodramatic, but the delivery is very deadpan. They're not like going for the broad strokes, like get the laugh, kind of goofing around kind of acting that you might find in your average comedy. But it also isn't all soulful and deep and like textured like you might find in some sort of like drama. So you end up with this at times kind of stilted, awkward, but deadpan kind of performances from quite a lot of people in the course of the film. Some of them, like they have their kind of warm moments, but it's not intended to be swinging for the fences here.
Coming back to those visuals again, how much of it depends on Anderson and his cinematographer setting up a tableau, a scene? It's a very theater thing to do.
Yes.
So that at any moment someone takes a picture, they're getting a story told. How much does it depend on that?
Oh, quite a bit. And maybe some of his previous ones were a little more obviously this way. And there's a little more camera movement and stuff in this. You could almost probably take any frame and go, take that frame out and you'd have like a photo that you could print up and put on a wall. He's definitely doing that. There are moments where some of the things in the background, there's one moment where they're like a character's out back of the theater and they're standing on a fire escape and there's dialogue. And then behind them on the wall of the building across the street is posters for things, and the stuff on the poster matches up with the dialogue that's being said. You know, not like 100, like 1-to-1, but it informs each other. He's got layers of detail in there that would, for people who love this kind of thing, they would get a lot out of watching it maybe more than once, because there's going to be more things in there to kind of grab onto as you go, once you have a kind of a feel for the story that's being told.
We're reviewing the movie Asteroid City. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We'll talk about whether or not this film has any social commentary and what it is after this. Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, Take Courage, Encouraging Words for Discouraging Times. This new resource reminds discouraged Christians of the one thing right in the world, the person who alone has overcome the world. Find out more about Take Courage at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Take Courage by Pastor Matt Harrison, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month.
I'm Chaplain Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Congregations work hard to keep the Word of Christ dwelling richly in His disciples now and into eternal life. We work to help and support that effort. Learn more at lcms.org/worship. You'll find resources on the church year, Bible studies on the hymns of the day, audio helps for learning to sing our services, and look for worship planning resources to find the latest from LCMS Worship. That's lcms.org/worship. May the Word of Christ dwell richly in you.
Luther Academy provides additional theological education for our mission partners around the world, specifically pastors who are asking for additional education but do not have the necessary resources in their own church bodies. By donating to Luther Academy today, you will be supplying food, housing, books, professors, and travel for Lutheran pastors who attend our conferences. To learn more about Luther Academy and how you can donate today, visit lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.
Trinity Lutheran Church in Vilonia, Indiana, is a mighty fortress that stands as a bulwark against the attacks of the devil, the world, and our sinful flesh. We are located in Jackson County, about 2 miles south of historic Fort Vilonia on State Road 135. Join us every Lord's Day for Sunday school and Bible class at 8:30 and divine service at 9:30. Come and receive the gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation from God's Valiant One, Jesus Christ, who has conquered death and holds the field forever.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues, Etc. congregational sponsor. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Gloria Dei Lutheran, Davie, Florida. Hope Lutheran, Spokane Valley, Washington. Lutheran Church of the Cross, Rockville, Maryland. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Kingsford, Michigan. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. John Lutheran, Clintonville, Wisconsin. St. Paul Lutheran, Hamel, Illinois. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. And Zion Lutheran, Embarrass, Wisconsin. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues, Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. We are reviewing the movie Asteroid City with Pastor Ted Geese. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, what kind of social commentary is in the film?
Listen, I don't want to wreck this for you.
I'm a big boy. I'm a big
okay,
boy.
Okay, all right, here we go.
And I have a very, very poor memory, so I might have forgotten. Much.
This is even better. Okay, so there's this kind of moment when we get to like the kind of like the apex of everything, and it kind of jumps back to like the play is being workshopped before it's even finished being written yet. The writer, Conrad Arp, played by Edward Norton, is there with a bunch of actors, some of which are going to be the actors that will be in the play that is the movie, essentially. And he has this idea for a part in the movie where, or in the play rather, where everybody kind of falls asleep. So collectively all falling asleep. Sort of think it like the Sleeping Beauty, where all of a sudden everybody in the kingdom falls asleep, kind of a deal. At any rate, all the actors are going to fall asleep, all the characters are going to fall asleep, and they're going to workshop this. And as they're doing that, one of the actors pops up and he blurts out, "You can't wake up if you don't go to sleep." And all of the other actors kind of start popping up and doing that. And it all kind of, everything from the whole entire movie all kind of coalesces on that moment. A bunch of different parts of the movie kind of coalesce on that. And it brings up this kind of very aggressive kind of push towards the audience with this mantra being said. And that's very interesting. So what is it that he is, like, part of the film is a quarantine that happens. Wes Anderson himself said that that's related to COVID-related stuff because the film was being written and made during that period. So does this mean you can't wake up if you don't go to sleep? Does that mean don't go to sleep? Stay awake? Or does it mean, hey, you're asleep now, wake up? And what is it that you're going to be waking up about? So in the course of the whole film, the play, the film, everything that you're viewing as an audience member, there's this kind of, like I was talking about, this agnostic nihilism, I guess you could say like postmodernist kind of question about truth. And the question is any of it true at all? Can science be trusted? Can the military be trusted? Can the alien be trusted? Can religion be trusted? Can I be trusted? Can the people around me be trusted? What is it that Wes Anderson thinks that you need to wake up from or to avoid falling asleep into? I think that's the underlying question that the film poses. So in terms of the social commentary, at the very least, it's raising a question about all of it. That's what I'm taking away from the film.
Who is the film for? Who's the audience?
Well, maybe you, probably me. I don't think it's for everybody. There's going to be people that, like, if they're like, I love Tom Hanks, I just want to go see that new Tom Hanks film. Well, this is going to be a little out to lunch. I would say that if you loved Tom Hanks in Joe versus the Volcano, then maybe this is the movie for you. If you like Tim Burton's Mars Attacks, maybe this movie's for you. If you liked The Dead Don't Die by Jim Jarmusch, that had Bill Murray and Tilda Swinton in it and Adam Driver, maybe this movie is for you. On the one hand, it's all of that, I would say, is on the positive end of things, perhaps, if you liked all of those films. It does, though, like if you're troubled by the question, like postmodern questions about truth and what it, like, to what extent something, anything is real, etc., then maybe it starts to get into the kind of category of something like The Invention of Lying by Ricky Gervais from 2009, which kind of starts out kind of fun and then gets really dark at the end. This doesn't ever really get very dark, but it does bring up big questions.
Is this one that may be a cult classic? One of those that's got a lot of big names? I'm thinking about the Coen Brothers films that can often, you know, have huge names in them. They don't draw huge box office, but people keep watching the films over and over and over again.
Okay, so when I walked out of the film, my wife, Michelle, and I, we went and watched it together. And we got home and she said, "Did you like it?" And my answer was, not sure, to be determined. So then I needed to think about it some more and think about it. And as I've been mulling it over, I'm liking it more. So this will age and date me a little tiny bit, but growing up along the way as a young person, I really enjoyed the musical band REM. A new album would come out, I'd pick it up, I'd listen to it, and the first time through, I'd be like, I don't know if I like this.
I couldn't discern the lyrics of half of it.
It's very true from the stuff in the 80s, that's for sure. So at any rate, like you kind of like at first blush, you're like, I don't know if I like this. And then you'd kind of go back to it, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, no, I really like this quite a bit. So I think that that might be the case for this film, I think. Now, I haven't seen The French Dispatch since it came out, but now I kind of maybe want to go back and see it again. I do like revisiting these films. Like for me, The Royal Tenenbaums, Rushmore, Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, and Bottle Rocket are the ones that, in Moonrise Kingdom and Fantastic Mr. Fox, these are the ones I like the best and would go back and watch them and enjoy them. Other ones I've seen once or twice, and that's lots. They're okay. So I think that for people who love these films, like his films, it's going to be something that people are going to enjoy. And in the theater, there were people there, and there were clearly people who were there to see a Wes Anderson film, and they were cracking up probably a little bit more than I was at different points along the way. So, but for some people, this might all just kind of get a little muddled and confusing along the way. So I think that, yeah, you're right. It's the kind of thing that's going to be more like a cult classic film in this kind of particular genre of filmmaking.
Two quick final questions. Did Michelle like it?
Not as much as I did, I don't think. There was, right at the very end of the film, which you're going to go see, as the credits are coming up and stuff at the end, she did laugh, which is unusual for her for anything that's considered comedic. So it did hit her just right, just at that spot. I think that, you know, she enjoyed all the actors and all the rest of it, but threading the needle of all of what's going on in it, I think she kind of didn't enjoy that part of watching it. I enjoy analysis. That's why we're talking. So she didn't like it maybe as much as I did, but it was a good night out.
Finally, your pastoral concerns with about 30 seconds.
There's kind of a brief bit of nudity in it that's, you know, not probably necessary for the film. And like I said, when I was kind of comparing a little bit to this Invention of Lying film by Ricky Gervais, if it's a real bother to you as a film viewer to be confronted with a director who maybe is presenting the idea that faith and religion doesn't amount to anything, then please take note of that going into this. The thing I can say about that in connection with Wes Anderson in this film is that he's an equal opportunist when it comes to this. So he's taking the air out of science and practically everything when it comes to this. I don't know if that makes it better or worse, but that's the lay of the land for that. So I think that if you're particularly sensitive to that, maybe you should consider that this is maybe not the movie for you on top of everything else. But that would be something. On the other hand, if you go and see this film with somebody who is agnostic, maybe it gets you into a conversation about what is true, what is truth, what does any of this mean? It could be the jumping off place for an interesting conversation.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. You'll find a link to his reviews on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
We will discuss headship and head coverings in 1 Corinthians 11 with Dr. Gregory Lockwood, author of the Concordia Commentary on 1 Corinthians, right after the break. When defending a biblical doctrine or practice, have you ever been accused of not caring for the lost? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Playing the Mission Card. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jeremy Lamont recounts his slow and sometimes painful path out of Mormonism to the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Psalm 144:1. Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. Those serving in the armed forces want LCMS chaplains. We need courageous pastors to bring the gospel and sacraments to those protecting our nation, along with wise counsel and the peace found only in Christ Jesus. If you are between the age of 26 and 43 and have a heart for ministry in the armed forces, call 314-996-1337 or email lcmschaps@lcms.org.
You and your youth group are invited to the 2023 Higher Things Youth Conference, Beyond Reasonable Doubt, at Trinity University in San Antonio, Texas, from July 25th through the 28th. Come hear pastors Brian Wolfmuller and Chris Roseborough teach the youth of our church about doubt and apologetics, and give them the assurance that their faith is beyond reasonable doubt. Remaining space is limited. Register now and find more information at higherthings.org.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Confessional Lutherans are invited to rent a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom Table Rock lakefront home in the Ozarks. Table Rock Lake is a premier lake in the heart of the Ozarks for boating, water sports, and fishing. This log cabin-style rental sleeps 12 and is 30 minutes from Branson and 20 minutes from Silver Dollar City. Learn more by calling Swanson Estates, 713-855-2681. Be sure to mention Issues Etc., 713-855-2681.